It's time to get controversial. We might even get in trouble here. We're going to talk drugs, doping, who's on the sauce, who's not, how in the world do you tell? We're going to go deep on this. And before we get into it, just a little background. Why can I speak from this? Well, I spent 10 years of my life in one of the biggest anti-doping things in USADA in the last couple decades that we've seen. U.S. track and field against the Nike Oregon Project. I lived it, experienced it, learned a whole heck of a lot more than I ever thought, and am glad to be done with it. But today, what we're going to talk about is not necessarily naming names, but to show you why, according to anti-doping people who I talk to very frequently, they said, hey, the athletes and coaches often know who is doping or likely doping before we even know. Why? Because when you're in the sport, you get a feel for it. And what I'm going to teach you is what that feel for it actually looks like. So when we look at performances, when we look at individuals, how do we know if they're clean or not? The truth is we can never fully know. Okay, but if we go through a series of, you know, steps to look at things, it helps us say, is this real or is this fake? And that's what you want to know as a fan or even a coach or even an athlete, because you want to know, do I support this? Do I, you know, mimic their training? Do I go to that training group? And too often we just don't know, and you're making kind of educated guesses. So I want to make that educated guess better. Why is this important? Because of the sad stats of the sport. A large percentage of people dope. Depending on the survey, again, and the sport, it could be anywhere between 10% all the way up to 35, even 40% if you look at the survey. Where do I think it falls? Probably the 10 to 20% depending on the event and sport. Some sports are much higher. Hello, cycling in the 1990s. In 2000s, some sports are much lower, okay? And we'll get into that. So let's dive into it. What do you suspect? How do you know these things? Number one, I think, is this, is who they surround themselves with. Your biggest tell is their agents and coaches. If they are part of a training group or with a coach who has had multiple athletes test positive, it's not rocket science. It's likely they're kind of shady, okay? And likely they're going to do something. Same with agents. Some agents are more involved than others, but there are agents who are more shady, who have many, many athletes who have tested positive, who turn a blind eye to their athletes doing stuff. And when some countries do some shady stuff behind the scenes. So when we look at who you surround yourself with, that's really important. It's not a final verdict. But having seen it firsthand, the way these things work is generally in groups, they, you know, with shady people, they try and like get you to go down the slippery slope. At first, it's like, oh, we're going to try this gray area thing, and here's some supplements that say they boost testosterone, or here's some, you know, prescription drugs that aren't prescribed to you, but, like, we can give them to you, or here's some medication that you might not need, but our team doctor has said that, you know, you need to take this, you know, no matter what, almost. Like, those things all happen over time. And if you're in a shady group, I don't care how strong your morals are, most people do what your mom warned you about. Is if little Susie jumps over the bridge, are you going to? The answer is yes. That's not just my opinion. It's what the research shows. I wrote about this in Win the Inside Game, my latest book. Is we look to others. We are heavily influenced by those around us. And if other people are doing shady stuff, we're likely to do shady stuff and go against our morals and ethics and all of those things. It takes a very strong individual to stand up and be like, no, no, this is kind of crazy. It also goes into play. This is why groups try to convince you that everyone is doing it. The Lance Armstrong effect of, hey, everyone's cheating, so it's not a big deal, is to lower the bar to make it seem reasonable that everyone is cheating. They do the same with supplements and medication and everything behind the gray area stuff. They try and convince you that this is normal, because if it's normal, you say yes. So they change the group dynamic to make it seem like it is normal to cheat or push the lines or do these things, so that you don't even think about it. So step number one, agents and coaches. I also like to look at, it's not just do they have people who test positive, it's the environments that they create. Do they create an environment where we are the miracle training group, where we're the only ones who can help you and figure it out? Is that coach saying, without me, you're nothing? If they're saying these types of things and coming across as the miracle coach, when there are dozens and dozens of really good coaches who can do great things, guess what? We're all working with the same information. There are no secrets on the internet anymore. Everybody knows training about the same. The breakthroughs, like, this isn't the 1940s or something where you have some breakthrough. We've all got the same training and mostly the same tech. There are dozens and dozens of good coaches. If you think you're the only one doing it, that's a warning sign. If that coach is a win-at-all-costs coach who defines themselves based on the wins, the success of their group, who treats their athletes as if, you know, their job is to prop that coach up and make them feel good and make them look like a superstar. If they are an ego coach, you are much more likely to see them go over the edge and start cheating. Why? It's all about their ego. They need to win at all costs. All costs means cheating, okay? They will do anything to perform well, to stroke that ego. If you have that ego, coach, it's more likely that group is doping. Same when we look at secrecy, right? If they are all about secrets and intimidating others and sometimes don't let you talk to rival groups, I've seen that many times, that's another indicator that, hey, this group is kind of shady and shady people do shady things. So you watch out for that. That's number one, that group culture, the agents, coaches. 9 times out of 10, like, if you see that, you got to throw that warning flag up and be like, I don't know about this. No matter how good or nice that person is, we go where the group is. Okay, the other thing you look out for is training locations. One of the secrets in an endurance sport is if you do drugs, you go train where they don't test much. Now, this is getting better, but still, there's certain locations where you go and you say, hey, it's harder to test here, or it's shadier. You know, drug testing, it's not as strict, so we're going to go train somewhere where people can't find us or catch us, or we can even pay people off. Like, these are the things that they do. So look at their training locations and where they do those things. Other things that matter here: supplements and legal or gray area drugs. There's research out there. It is a slippery slope effect, and shady people take advantage of this. If you start taking these supplements that are kind of shady but legal, over time, it's not a guarantee, but your likelihood of taking something that steps over that line goes up, okay? Because you can justify small steps. It's hard to get someone to say, hey, I've only taken, you know, Flintstone vitamins, go take EPO or what have you, or testosterone. It's a lot easier if you go, hey, like, let's take, you know, this supplement, and then this shady thing, and then this testosterone booster or this testosterone precursor. And then you get to the point eventually where it's like, hey, we're already taking all this stuff. You're medically low on this, so we can justify you taking, like, microdoses of this. You need this. Like, it's easier to convince. So if they're going down that rabbit hole and they have 25 different supplements that they're taking and some are shady, or they're taking legal drugs but, you know, getting them in places they don't need, kind of like the asthma inhaler that everybody has, but it's like, you don't have asthma, you're okay, man. Like, that tells you that that group, that situation, that doctor, that legal team, they're willing to push those bounds, so you watch out for that. Moving away from drugs and supplements, the other test we look at, especially with Strava, is the training real or fake? Look, I've been around elite athletes, elite runners, and elite endurance athletes. I've seen all their training from everybody. Why? Because for a long time, whenever an athlete failed at a coach or needed a new environment, I was like the second or third coach they'd go to. So I'd say, hey, let me see all your training. And you'd get to see every other coach's training. And here's what I'm going to tell you. It's all kind of variations on the same thing. Even with the robust elite athletes, you still have to work within the laws of like human nature, physics, and all this stuff. Okay? No one gets away with insanity for too long. Okay? If you see someone whose training is way out there for a long time, then that becomes an indicator. Now, not always. Sometimes we get freaks of nature. Jim Ryan, freak of nature, did crazy things. But Jim Ryan did pay the price. He had lots of injuries and burnout and had to come back from things. And we didn't know as much in the 60s. Okay? Sometimes people can handle crazy things. But if they handle crazy things forever, it's a pretty good sign that they're getting some sort of boost that allows them to do it. So don't just look at some small snippet of like, look at this workout or this week. It's over time. Can they handle insane stuff for a prolonged period where they don't have that recovery, that bouncing back, those other things? We can't defy the laws of nature. If you see someone racing all the time and training at a high level all the time, it gives you an indicator of like, hey, is this possible? If you see someone bouncing back all the freaking time and showing no signs of fatigue after race, round after round, that's a good indicator as well. We're all human. As I'm, you know, recording this video, Noah Lyles just pulled out of the 200 in the final. Why? Because he cramped up a little bit and he said, hey, I was fatigued. I ran rounds of the 100, 297 something hundreds, and I just ran out of gas. This is Olympic champ in the 100. Running out of gas is normal. If someone never runs out of gas, that's a problem. Because even the best of the best do. We face this all the time. Okay? The other thing to look at is progressions or jumps in performance. Now, progress doesn't look like a linear upwards thing. It's valleys, it includes jumps, it includes big jumps sometimes, but generally those occur for a reason. Big jumps occur earlier in our training, when we're young, going through puberty, coming out of it, getting into college, a new environment where we take training to a new level. Okay, they generally don't occur later in life. Now, sometimes they do. If we had prolonged breaks, if we had a long injury history, if we had super shoes, like there are explanations. But if we see big jumps at strange times, after long years of consistency at one level, it's a warning sign. Now, it doesn't mean automatically they're doping, but it means we need an explanation. Did they come off of a long injury? Did they have a big change in training or shoe tech or bicarb or something? We need something to explain the jump. Same with age curves. You can't beat aging. Okay? Even the runners who I'm sure are clean, who performed well into their 30s and even 40s, like they aged and they saw the repercussions. Okay? Their times didn't suddenly improve at 45 or what have you. They followed natural age declines. Okay, that's normal. The other thing we're looking at on progressions is if they're jumping multiple things at once, which have been steady for a long time. So if you're improving your speed, your endurance, your kick, all of these components at once, it's generally kind of a red flag of like, wait a minute, how did you develop this speed or this kick when you've never had it in your life? Okay. That can happen sometimes, but generally we don't see multiple aspects at once taking a huge jump. It's one thing or the other. The last thing you look at is the event in the sport. Okay? Different sports and different events are more likely. Look at the 100-meter list. The top 20 times or whatever don't look that good. If you look at, not saying all of them are doping, some are clean, but there's a history there of saying, hey, there's a lot of times here that we're doping, so you have to explain it. You have to say, how come this guy is better than all these people that were doping? Sometimes you get a freak of nature. That's true. Sometimes we get performance boosts, jumps from technology or tracks or shoes or what have you. That's also true. Or training or nutrition. Okay? But we've got to look at the event and the sport and see how do these things mix up. Okay? That's why cycling, much dirtier, I think, than running. Why? The long history of it. The involvement of doctors and doctors as coaches. Like, all of that comes into play here. In certain events and certain sports, there is a higher likelihood in history. The same goes with if we look at different countries and their sports. Okay? It's no secret. Go look at the testing at different countries and you're going to see better testing and anti-doping, and some places that are shady. You're going to see places that have long histories of doping. Hello, looking at Russia and what they went through. And you're going to see countries and histories that have kind of a slightly cleaner look. And this varies by sport and event as well. Okay? You have to consider all of these things. None of them are an indictment on a single individual or coach or group, but when you take all of these things into consideration, it tells you, do I raise the warning light and say, this doesn't seem real, and for good reason, or do you feel pretty good about it? For example, Josh Kerr just broke the mile world record, okay? I've never met Josh, don't know him, okay? At least I don't think I've ever met him. But there's several things working in his favor. First off, he has a long history of being good, okay? He was good as a teenager. He was an NCAA star. He came out. He's competed well at World Championships, Olympics. He's been at that level for a while. You can see it. You could see the progression coming. You could see the talent there early, okay? His coach, Danny Mackey, was one of the whistleblowers that went through 10 years of hell with me. Okay, he was one of the original whistleblowers on the situation. That's what it is. Okay, he risked his life and job, okay, to blow the whistle here. It's part of it. Okay, so that gives me some faith here. The breaking the world record, okay, there's at least some reasonable explanation for it. We had a boost in bicarb now that we didn't used to have because, like, now you have the hydrogel that makes it where you don't have GI distress. Back in my day, if you took bicarb, you know, baking soda, it was gonna come out one of your ends, one of either ends. Like, it was not a pleasant experience. Lots of people tried it, and you couldn't sustain it. We also have the Shoe Tech, which is documented. It's lab-backed. Like, we can see the boost in performance that occurs. We can see it out on the tracks. From middle school to high school to college to pro, we've seen a lifting that trackflation. A large part of that is the tech. And that makes sense, because tech should improve everything. If we just saw it in this elite of elite, it tells us, maybe it's not the tech. Maybe it's something else. But we see that tech. All of those things give us a reason for, like, okay, sure, I can see why we could reach a 27-year-old world record and finally break it. You also see other people around him, you know, who are in that arena. Nagus, you know, Ingebrigtsen, Hawker, like all of these guys who can run 327 for 1500 or 345 or 344 or 343 for a mile. It's within the realm of possibility. So that's a perfect example of someone I feel good about cheering on, because you have these things that line up where you say, okay, this makes sense. It is believable. It is not fake tits. Like, we can see it. That's how I kind of look at things. And that's how I judge and keep my sanity as a fan and as a coach. Like, I sit back and I say, hey, I feel good about cheering for this person. And if I see someone who has a bunch of red flags, I say, you know what? I'm just going to stay silent and not cheer for them. And, you know, whatever. If they do well, good for them. But I'm a little suspicious, and I'm going to cheer for the people behind them that I feel good about, or the coaches who I feel good about it. Okay, that's how I look at the sport and keep my sanity in there. Hopefully you enjoyed this behind the scenes. If you have any other questions on doping, I guess I can answer them in the comments. For those new, thanks for joining. This is how we do things, okay? I'm in a spare bedroom, no script, no AI, just me staring at a computer screen, trying to talk to you with my entire notes are progression, agents, coaches, culture, training, jumps, outliers, events, sport. That might have been more than spy, but like that's what it says there. And then I riff off of earned knowledge instead of superficial stuff that I got from AI or what have you. If you're interested, join us. Subscribe, like, share, do all those things. Check out my newsletter, my Substack. It's at Steve Magnus. I'm on Instagram at Steve Magnus. And, you know, my books as well. Till next time, everybody. Have fun. Don't dope. Clean sport.